Usually when you go to an ATM and withdraw your own cash, the machine doesn't interrogate you.
Right.
It's just, it checks your balance, it spits out the 20s, and you just go on your way.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't have to explain to the bank whether you're, I don't know, buying groceries, paying for a haircut, or placing a bet on a horse. The transaction is just purely mechanical.
Nobody's asking for a receipt.
Exactly. But imagine if suddenly that ATM just paused, locked your card, and demanded a 50-page dossier on your life choices before dispensing a single dollar.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and imagine if you didn't provide it, the bank teller standing inside the branch could be dragged into a legal dispute like 3 years later.
Which is terrifying.
It really is. And that is exactly what it feels like right now in the Australian mortgage market when it comes to cashing out equity. So, welcome to today's deep dive. We are thrilled to have you here with us. Today, we're looking at the hidden compliance traps in Australia's booming cash-out refinancing market of 2026.
Yeah, and we're going to look at how brokers can fundamentally restructure their practices to, well, to essentially survive this environment.
Right.
We are drawing our insights today from an incredibly detailed piece published in the Broker Times. It's titled Mastering the Cash Out, a Framework for Broker Compliance.
Great piece.
Yeah, it really is. And our mission for this deep dive is to decode exactly why a totally standard financial transaction has suddenly become this absolute regulatory minefield. And we want to give you, the listener, the exact blueprint to build a defensible, durable practice.
Okay, let's unpack this, because the sheer scale of the situation right now is, honestly, it's staggering.
It's massive.
The source drops a statistic right at the start that really puts this into perspective. Nearly one in three refinance deals in Australia right now involve some form of cash out.
One in three.
One in three. We are no longer talking about a niche scenario or, a rare client request. We are talking about the absolute core of the market. And we really need to understand the mechanics of why this is happening right now in 2026, because this didn't just manifest out of thin air.
No, not at all. It is entirely driven by the macroeconomic environment we've seen over the last few years. I mean, we've experienced massive property value growth across Australian capitals.
Just unprecedented growth.
Exactly. And what that growth has done is effectively act as a giant key, unlocking just enormous amounts of equity for everyday homeowners.
Yeah.
People are, they look at their mortgage statements, they look at their property valuation, and they realize they're sitting on a gold mine of unrealized wealth.
And naturally, they want to use it.
Of course they do.
Yeah.
Clients are tapping into this newfound wealth for home renovations. They're using it as deposits for investment properties. They're attempting to consolidate consumer debt, or they're injecting business top-ups. It has basically become the default conversation happening in broker offices across the country.
Which brings us to a crucial pivot point, really. Because a booming market means a massive amount of money is changing hands. And, well, history consistently shows us that where rivers of money flow, regulatory scrutiny is never far behind.
Always.
But how does an incredibly common transaction turn into a massive liability? Like, who is actually driving this crackdown?
So the pressure is coming directly from ASIC, the Australian Securities and Investments Commission.
Right.
And it's really manifesting through AFCA, the Australian Financial Complaints Authority. Basically, ASIC is applying the Responsible Lending Framework under Regulatory Guide 209.
RG209.
Yeah, RG209. And to understand why this is such a trap, you really have to understand how RG209 fundamentally changed the rules of the game. Historically, the primary question a lender or a broker had to answer was simply, can the client afford the monthly repayment?
Just purely a mathematical exercise.
Exactly. Purely about capacity. But RG209 shifted the burden entirely. The question is no longer just about capacity. It is about harm prevention.
Prevention.
Right. The regulator is now asking, is putting this client into this specific loan structure going to cause them foreseeable financial harm? And crucially, that framework applies to every single dollar being borrowed, heavily penalizing the cash out component.
Wait, I have to play devil's advocate here for you, our listener, because I know exactly what some of you might be thinking right now.
Sure, go for it.
If a client sits across from a Gregor and says, look, my house went up in value. I want to pull out 50 grand for an investment. Why is it the broker's job to suddenly play detective?
Yeah, it feels intrusive.
Right. Shouldn't the client's word be enough? They're adults. It's their house. It's their equity. If they want to blow it, isn't that their prerogative?
What's fascinating here is how the legal obligations actively redefine the broker-client relationship. It completely overrides that traditional sense of personal agency.
Interesting.
Yeah, under the best interest duty, the broker is legally forbidden from just being an order taker. They are mandated to be a professional advisor.
So they can't just nod and fill out the form.
No, exactly. Because of that duty, the cash-out portion of the loan needs its own dedicated suitability rationale. You cannot simply defend a file by saying, well, the overall loan is affordable.
Right.
You have to explicitly prove on paper that releasing this extra cash is actively improving the client's financial position based on their specific situation.
Mm-hmm.
And what the AFCA complaint data is revealing is a very dangerous pattern. Brokers are failing to prove that the funds actually serve the client's stated purpose without causing collateral damage.
So we essentially have a situation where brokers are doing the math, but they're failing the narrative.
Yes, perfectly said.
And the source actually breaks down the anatomy of a failed file, highlighting the distinct ways brokers are leaving themselves totally exposed. Rather than just giving us a list, the article paints a picture of a life cycle of failure.
Yeah, it's a great breakdown.
It usually starts with how the broker captures the client's intent. Like the software brokers use every day has a drop-down menu for loan purpose, and they might just click renovation or investment.
And that right there is the illusion of compliance. A broker clicks renovation, thinks they've documented the purpose, and just moves on.
Job done, right.
But a regulator looks at a single word field selection and sees absolutely nothing.
Right.
Like, what are they renovating? Is it a structural extension or are they just painting the living room?
Right.
This leads to nightmare scenarios for brokers. Let's imagine a hypothetical, highly realistic client. We'll call him Dave.
Okay, let's talk about Dave.
So Dave tells his broker he wants to pull out $80,000 for home improvements. The broker notes renovation in the file, gets the loan approved, and Dave gets the cash.
Sounds standard so far.
Right, but Dave actually uses that $80,000 to buy a depreciating asset, like, say, a luxury boat.
Oh, no.
A year later, Dave loses his job. He can't afford the higher mortgage payments. His boat has lost 20% of its value. And he complains to AFCA that his broker saddled him with unaffordable debt.
And when AFCA pulls that file, the broker's entire defense is literally just the word renovation selected from a drop-down menu. There are no quotes, no scope of work, absolutely nothing to prove the broker actually investigated the request.
Precisely. And the broker loses that dispute every single time. And honestly, it gets worse because brokers compound this error by ignoring the equity component during their structural needs analysis.
What do you mean by that?
Well, brokers are generally incredibly diligent when it comes to getting the client the best interest rate or finding the right product features and calculating the loan-to-value ratio perfectly. But they treat the actual cash out as an afterthought. LVR is a classic trap here.
Okay, how so?
A broker might look at a file and think, well, the property is worth $2 million. The total loan is only $1 million, so the LVR is a very safe 50%. There is almost zero risk to the bank.
But the bank's risk profile isn't the issue here, is it?
Exactly. The best interest duty is about the client's risk profile. It doesn't matter if the bank is perfectly safe if pulling out an extra $80,000 is a terrible idea for the client's long-term wealth.
That makes total sense.
Mm-hmm.
If your notes spend 3 pages on why you chose one bank over another to save like 0.1% on the rate, but 0 pages on why pulling the cash out was a good idea in the first place, you have a massive compliance gap.
Which naturally bleeds into the issue of serviceability. Brokers are generally very good at assessing the serviceability of the total loan amount today, but they are consistently failing to stress test what happens after the money is actually deployed.
Right.
Passing the bank's calculator at the moment of application is simply not enough anymore.
I want to make sure we really nail the mechanism of this because it feels like a conceptual blind spot for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. It's like approving someone for a 30-year mortgage based on their high-paying corporate salary today, completely ignoring the fact that they just explicitly told you they're using the cash out to quit their job and start a bakery tomorrow.
Yes.
You are approving a loan for a reality that is literally about to vanish.
That is the perfect illustration of post-drawdown serviceability. If a client pulls out cash to buy an investment property, what happens when they take on the additional debt of that new investment? What are the holding costs going to be?
Or the bakery example.
Exactly. What if they use the cash to start a business, which temporarily destroys their steady income? If the client's financial position is going to change materially because of how they use the funds, the broker has to document that future state, not just present a snapshot of today.
And the final nail in the coffin for these failed files is the sheer lack of written evidence. Brokers are having these deep strategic conversations, but they are relying entirely on verbal agreements.
Which is so dangerous.
The source says it bluntly, your notes are your evidence. If they're thin, your defense is thin. It reminds me of someone getting pulled over for doing 20 over the speed limit.
Okay.
The police officer walks up to the window and the driver says, look, you have to understand, my wife is in labor. I really needed to get somewhere fast. That might be 100% true. It might be a perfectly valid moral reason.
Right. But if you go to court 3 years later and you don't have a hospital record to prove it, trust me, we talked about it, is simply not a legal defense.
And regulators are showing zero tolerance for the trust me defense in 2026. If it's not in writing and signed by the client, it basically did not happen in the eyes of the law.
So we have a booming market, intense ASIC scrutiny shifting the focus from capacity to harm prevention, and files failing because of vague categories, LVR complacency, ignored future realities, and a lack of paper trails.
It's a lot.
That is a terrifying landscape.
Yeah.
But the source doesn't just complain about the problem. It actually gives us a defense manual.
Right.
Here's where it gets really interesting. So looking at what this actually demands of a broker, it is a sobering realization. It is a ton of work.
Oh, absolutely.
The source outlines a strategic methodology for building a bulletproof file, moving from the genesis of the client's idea all the way to a signed defense. Let's explore how a broker actually implements this. So the foundation of a defensible file starts at the genesis of the idea, pinning down the specific purpose and verifying the math. We established earlier that renovation isn't enough. Your file needs to state exactly what they are doing.
Like, down to the details.
Yeah, are they adding a second story? Are they installing a pool? But more importantly, you have to trace the exact dollar figure back to that objective.
The math has to make sense.
Exactly. If a client says they need $100,000 for a kitchen renovation, but they only provide a builder's quote for $60,000, where's the other $40,000 going?
I have to stop you there, because if I am a broker and I start demanding itemized receipts for an extra $40,000 of my client's own equity, they are going to get highly defensive.
Oh, for sure.
They might just want a really nice espresso machine, or maybe they just want a buffer in case things go wrong. How do you practically manage that conversation without totally alienating the client?
You manage the friction by explaining the regulatory reality to the client. You basically make the regulator the bad guy.
I see.
You say, look, I want to get you this money, but the laws have changed and the banks require me to explain every dollar to ensure I am protecting you. If the $40,000 is a buffer for cost overruns, that is a perfectly acceptable answer.
Really? Just a buffer?
Yes. But the mechanism of compliance is that you must document the discrepancy. You literally write down, client requested $100,000, quotes total $60,000, question the $40,000 variance. Client stated it is a contingency buffer for unexpected structural issues. Advise client on the interest cost of borrowing unused funds client accepted risk.
Wow, okay.
Leaving a phantom $40,000 floating in the loan amount without an explanation is a giant red flag for an auditor. Documenting the conversation neutralizes the flag.
That makes the abstract compliance rule feel much more manageable. You don't have to prevent them from taking the buffer. You just have to prove you warn them about the cost of it.
Exactly.
Once the purpose and the math are locked in, the source moves into the defense strategy itself, specifically the structural needs analysis. This is where you prove why releasing equity was the chosen weapon.
Right, because the regulator wants to see the broker's intellectual working out. Why are we extending a 30-year home loan instead of just getting a 5-year personal loan for this kitchen?
Or a construction loan.
Yeah, why not a dedicated construction loan where the bank controls the drawdowns? The beauty of this requirement is that it doesn't demand a novel. The source explicitly notes it only takes 2 or 3 sentences of sharp analysis.
Just a few sentences.
Yep, you just have to prove that your brain went through the exercise of comparing the available structures and that you arrived at the most beneficial outcome. It's like showing your work in high school algebra.
Right.
The final answer doesn't matter if you can't show the formula you used to get there.
And then we move into documenting the future reality. This directly addresses that bakery analogy we discussed earlier regarding post-drawdown serviceability.
Exactly. Step 4.
The broker needs to build a post-drawdown narrative. They're essentially writing down, here is a snapshot of the client's budget today, and here is a realistic projection of what their cash flow will look like 6 months from now, once this new money has been deployed and the new lifestyle or obligations kick in.
Which is critical.
But again, pushing back on this, asking a client to sign a declaration of their budget 6 months in the future, doesn't a broker run the risk of losing that client to the broker down the street who just pushes the paperwork through blindly?
That is the commercial tension every broker faces right now.
Oh.
But the broker down the street who pushes it through blindly is the one who will lose their license when the market turns.
That's a good point.
But to protect your license, you have to secure written confirmation. You take all these details, the specific purpose, the math, the structural analysis, the future cash flows, summarize them, and have the client physically or digitally sign a declaration.
Getting it in writing.
It fundamentally shifts the burden of truth. When AFCA comes knocking, it is no longer just your interpretation of a phone call.
Mm-hmm.
It is a signed attestation from the borrower saying, I fully understood and directed this strategy.
And the source adds one final crucial layer to this defense, which is the documentation of concerns. Because real life is messy.
Very messy.
A perfect spotless file actually looks suspicious to an auditor. The source says you need to note if anything didn't add up during the meeting. For example, if a client initially says the funds are for a car, but halfway through the meeting admits it's actually to pay off a massive tax debt they were embarrassed about.
Yeah, and documenting that messy reality might be the most powerful demonstration of professional integrity you can provide.
How so?
Well, if you write down, client's story changed, I questioned the discrepancy, we had a difficult conversation about the tax debt, and we adjusted the strategy accordingly, you are showing a regulator that you are actively analyzing the situation. You're not just acting as a rubber stamp for whatever the client wants.
Mm. I really like how this entirely shifts the perspective of what a broker actually does. This process isn't just about handing the client a receipt at the end of a transaction. It's about providing regulators with a complete chain of custody for the equity being released.
Chain of custody. I like that.
Yeah. You are taking raw, abstract equity in a house, turning it into liquid cash, and tracking its conceptual journey from the bank's vault to the client's ultimate goal. You're proving true professional judgment at every single link in that chain. If one link is missing or unexplained, the entire chain is compromised and the file fails.
That chain of custody framing is brilliant. It perfectly encapsulates the burden of proof required in 2026.
Now, while this six-step framework applies to all cash outs, whether it's for a pool, a car, or an investment, our source takes a very sharp, urgent turn to address one specific scenario where this documentation isn't just best practice, it is a matter of professional survival.
Yeah, we have to talk about the danger zone.
We have to talk about the danger zone debt consolidation.
Debt consolidation is universally recognized by regulators right now as the absolute highest risk scenario in the refinancing space.
Why is consolidating debt so much more dangerous for a broker's liability compared to, say, pulling out money to build an extension on a house?
Because the psychology of the client and the mathematics of the debt are both working against you.
Okay, unpack that.
You're dealing with a client who is usually under acute financial stress, and you are fundamentally mutating the nature of their obligations. The requirements to prove this is in their best interest are incredibly strict. A broker needs a full schedule of the retiring debts, hard confirmation of which specific credit card or personal loan accounts will actually be closed at settlement, and a rigorous before and after cash flow comparison.
Let's look at the actual mechanism of that mutation, because there is a massive psychological trade-off happening here that the client has to grasp. And the broker must document.
Right.
You are basically taking an immediate financial fire and putting it out, trading short-term financial relief for long-term pain.
Yep.
For example, you take a $20,000 credit card debt that might have taken 5 painful years to pay off, and you absorb it into a 30-year mortgage. Yes, their monthly payment drops dramatically today, which feels like a huge win.
It feels great in the moment.
But through the compounding mathematics of a 30-year loan, they could easily end up paying triple the amount of interest on that original $20,000 over the life of the mortgage.
Exactly. You are converting short-term unsecured debt into long-term secured debt secured against their family home.
Which is huge.
If your file doesn't explicitly show that you mapped out that exact mathematical reality for the client, if you don't have proof that they fully grasp that long-term consequence and chose the short-term cash flow relief anyway, you were entirely exposed.
Completely defenseless.
If they complain to AFCA 5 years later that you trapped them in a cycle of endless debt and drained their equity to pay for old groceries, you will lose.
And it isn't just regulators driving this anxiety. The lender landscape is shifting dramatically in response. The major banks are reading the room. They're building walls to protect themselves from this exact regulatory risk.
Oh, absolutely.
The source notes that major banks are now demanding these purpose declarations right at the point of application. They are taking files with vague purposes, like debt consolidation without a breakdown, and kicking them straight into manual review, grinding the approval process to a halt.
The banks do not want to be left holding the bag if a broker's compliance falls through. They are forcing the broker to do the investigative work up front.
So what does this all mean for the broker on the ground? If I have a tricky debt consolidation file or a client who is being a bit evasive about where the money is really going, can I just bypass all this major bank red tape by taking the file to a non-bank lender? Aren't second-tier lenders usually more flexible with their policies?
If we connect this to the bigger picture, relying on a non-bank to hide a thin file is a fatal assumption. The source lays out a very harsh reality regarding lender selection. If you place a cash out file with a non-bank, specifically because a major bank knocked it back for being too risky or too vaguely documented, your documentation standard actually needs to be substantially higher, not lower.
Wait, higher? Why would it be higher if the non-bank is willing to accept it?
Because you have to view it through the lens of an auditor looking at the best interest duty. From an auditor's perspective, you have just taken a vulnerable client who was deemed too risky by a primary lender, and you have put them into a product that almost certainly carries a higher interest rate, steeper fees, or harsher terms.
Oh, right.
The burden of proof to show that placing them in that more expensive product was actively in their best interest is exponentially heavier. You have to rigorously document exactly why accepting those punishing non-bank terms was better for the client's overall financial health than the alternative of simply not getting the cash at all.
That makes a lot of sense.
You cannot outrun the compliance requirements by switching lenders, because the fiduciary responsibility is attached to your license, not to the bank's product matrix.
That is a critical warning. The liability follows you. Well, this has been an incredibly eye-opening journey through the heavy machinery of the 2026 mortgage market. We have covered a massive amount of ground today.
We really have.
So, to you, our listener, let's bring this all together. If you are a broker operating right now, the era of the easy, frictionless cash out is officially over. Cash out refinancing is now a documentation-intensive investigative transaction.
Absolutely.
Your files must demonstrate, not just assume, that the funds serve a verified purpose. They must show the mathematical proof that the loan structure is undeniably in the client's best interests. And they must prove that serviceability was deeply stress-tested for the client's reality post-drawdown. The days of checking a drop-down box and hoping for the best are gone. You have to build a complete narrative defense.
It is entirely about being proactive, building the armor before the battle begins.
Which leads us to the final call to action from our source, and it's a practical challenge we want to issue to you right now. As soon as this deep dive is over, open your software and pull your last five cash out files.
Go do it.
Look at them through the eyes of an auditor. Do you have a specific description of the purpose or just a category? Did you verify the math and document any gaps? Is the structural needs analysis clearly written out? Did you map out the post-drawdown cash flow? Do you have a signed written declaration from the client? Did you note any discrepancies or concerns during the process?
Such important checklist.
Find the gaps in your own files today and fix your process before that process needs defending in front of a regulatory body.
And, you know, this raises an important question, something we really need to sit with as we look at the broader economic landscape over the next few years. We know that massive, unprecedented property value growth unlocked all this equity in the first place, fueling this entire cash out boom we are analyzing today. But property markets are inherently cyclical. What happens if property values plateau or even experience a significant dip in the future? How many of those poorly documented, casually approved cash outs from the current boom times will suddenly leave clients underwater on their mortgages, turning those incredibly thin files into ground zero for a tidal wave of AFCA complaints?
That is a chilling thought for anyone who hasn't locked down their paperwork. It brings us right back to the beginning. The next time you are facilitating a cash out, remember, it is no longer like stepping up to an ATM for a quick, no questions asked withdrawal. You are the guardian of the vault. You are the architect of the client's financial future. And every single dollar out the door needs a rock solid, fully documented alibi. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.